Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. It's available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. Chris Holmes is an American heavy metal guitarist and songwriter. Holmes started his musical career in Pasadena, California in the late 1970s and early 1980s. He's best known as the lead guitarist of heavy metal band Wasp, together with Blackie Lawless and Randy Piper. He was one of the founding members of the band. Holmes was a member of Wasp first from 83 to 90 and again from 96 to 2001. Written and directed by French filmmakers Antoine de Montremy and Laurent Hart, Mean Man, the story of Chris Holmes, was a project that was born in 2014 after they had an opportunity to meet and direct Holmes in a music video for the Holmes pen song Let It Roar, which is my favorite tune, in Cannes, France. At the time, the former Wasp guitarist had more or less disappeared from the music scene, leaving his home in the U.S., to seek out a new beginning with his wife, Sarah, in France. Not content with merely directing a music video for the reborn Holmes, de Montremy pursued his bigger dream of writing and directing a documentary film about this iconic metal guitar legend, and for the next several years, shadowed him throughout Europe while filming everything from band rehearsals to recording sessions to live performances. By creatively combining archival footage, interviews with past and present band members and musical peers, family members, and childhood friends. With beautifully filmed concert performances of Holmes' current solo band, director de Montremy skillfully portrays the story of an iconic guitar player who has lived a life of extreme highs and lows. After losing the publishing rights of his own songs and combating dangerous addictions, the legendary Wasp guitarist is shown starting over from scratch while living at his mother-in-law's Cannes, France, as he puts together with his wife a brand new band and a brand new musical role as not only the main guitarist, but now as the actual lead singer of his newly born musical project, aptly named Mean Man. Cleopatra Entertainment plans for this release, including a standalone DVD, home entertainment version, and a Blu-ray version, chock full of bonus goodies, not available on the digital VOD version, which will follow the DVD and Blu-ray release just in time for the holidays. A U.S. West Coast theatrical premiere is being discussed as well, pending the revision and or relaxation of the current local state's government restrictions on movie theaters operating during the COVID pandemic. Holmes joined Wasp in 82 and remained with the group until 90. In 96, Holmes rejoined Wasp and stayed with the band until 2001. He has not played with the band since. Please welcome American heavy metal guitarist and songwriter, Chris Holmes. Hello, Chris.
Hey, that's me.
That's you, man.
Yeah. That was a good intro, man.
Hey, man, you got a lot going on in your life.
Yeah. Well, not right now with the COVID.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah. there's been a lot of things going on. It's been 40 years. That's 38.
It's a long time.
From when Watt started, but it's been probably 45 from when I ever started playing guitar, you know?
What was your first guitar? Do you remember?
It was a Fender Jaguar. The Jazzmaster. They're the same shape of a guitar. Well, they're just got different pickup plates on them, you know?
How old were you when you got that?
I think I was 14.
Yep. Yeah, I think I was...
Normally, if somebody asked me, what was my first guitar? I'm a smart ass. I'd say a six string. but I'm not going to try to be a smart ass, all right?
It's all right. I'm used to it. My first guitar actually was a Tele, and I kept it for years and years and years. As a matter of fact, I sold it about 5 years ago. Did you keep that first guitar?
No. I gave it to a friend.
Right.
I sold it to him for about $80. A friend of mine. The problem is with that guitar, the Jazzmaster, the fret scales are smaller.
Right.
You know, from the nuts of the bridge, it's real short scale. So I'm a big person. I have to use a bigger scale neck.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
That, you know, it's interesting how in the early days, you and Eddie Van Halen used to trade guitars back and forth. that was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, we come from the same town, you know.
Yeah.
And grew up doing the same stuff. He just was a few years older than me.
Right.
He had his band. And, sad that I still haven't gotten over his death, you know. Still, I think about it, it makes tears in my eyes, you know.
The whole world hasn't gotten over his death. It's incredible, you know. It's so sad that we're losing so many of these great legends, you know. It really hurts because we all grew up with these guys, you know.
Yeah. Well, he was one of the biggest ones, you know. Probably to me, he was probably one of the best guitar player I've ever met, you know, in the world. So
I'm assuming you guys have jammed together many times. Is that true?
He came down to my rehearsal room and played with my band. We were messing around, but we sit around and chink around mostly messing with the amps to get them to sound a certain way.
Right.
You know, to get a crunch sound out of them. Because in those days, they had a big muff, hardly any pedals, you know, and they amps, they didn't even have the preamps on them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They just had an input and that was it, you know, and a volume. You know,
go ahead.
In the early days, it was cool. Ed figured out how to use a Marshall amp on 10 where it wasn't just blasting in the club. And he figured out that you take a voltage regulator in between the amp and the wall. That's like a dimmer switch.
Right.
It's called a variac.
Huh.
You can't do that. If you took a dimmer switch and blow the amp up because the amps drop, there's something about electricity, the amps drop when you turn it down, but a variac, the amps do not drop, they stay constant, but the voltage drops, okay?
Right.
And therefore, you can crank the amp on 10 and you turn that down and actually the voltage from the tubes turn down just like it would a light. And the volume of the amp turns down but still cranked on 10.
Hmm. I've never heard that before.
It's a variac. Yeah. Because of those kind of this was before they had preamps
right.
on amplifiers.
Right.
You got to remember that. And that's how Ed figured that out. They're real smart on stuff, you know.
Yeah. Do you?
But we used to mess.
Go ahead.
We used to mess around with stuff like that, you know. One time, really funny story. We were playing at my. We were messing around at it. We had the amp cranked. I think we had two amps. We were trying them out, messing around. Had it cranked and the windows were open and Ed was like, "Hey Chris, don't you want to close the windows? You know your neighbor's gonna call the police." So I was like, "Yeah, don't worry about them." And I was hoping the neighbors would think that was me playing.
Very clever.
It was funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
Yeah. He had a good touch, you know, back in the 74, 70, you know, just the way he played.
Yeah.
No, but I just, that's my head.
funny. He had a really good, crisp, clean sound, you know, for playing so, you know, hardcore rock and roll. So he was something else. He really was, you know.
Yeah, he's an innovator.
Yeah, very fast too, very quick with his fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're an excellent guitar player as well, man.
I'm the kind of guy, that plays on 10. I don't like turning down on 9 energy-wise. You know, I don't like the acoustic stuff and the pretty song stuff. I like it on 10. Start on 10 and end on 10.
I don't blame you. Yep. Yeah, I'm the same way. I remember in the beginning, the only thing I could find was like they had a Fuzz Buster. And the fuzz tone, the little box, and you know, that and turning it up, you know, close to 10, man, that was heaven.
Yeah. I don't know, they're all super lead Marshalls.
Right. My first amp was a Vox, like the Beatles.
Vox, huh?
Yeah.
But the one Brian May used?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, those are good sounding.
Yeah, they are good. They're pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they, what's that, AC, 600, 300, something, I forget the name of them.
They were good amps, though.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your documentary, man. This is pretty exciting, isn't it? The Mean Man documentary, which is, I guess it's due out January 15th, right?
Yeah, 15th, 20th, something like that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not in America, so I don't know the release date of that.
Yeah, that's the word I got.
Yeah. It's been, you know, 5-6 years ago I ran into Antoine.
Right.
At Hellfest, and we got to talking, and he owned a video company. He did a interview with me, blah, 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 and this and that, and we got to know him pretty well, met him on the phone, and it was an idea between my wife and Antoine and I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show the heartaches between ups and downs of music, you know, of touring or whatever. When I first was here, I didn't have a big tour bus and all this money and all that crap, you know, that I've had in the 80s and 90s.
Yep.
And so it shows us touring in a regular car, what goes on, me doing interviews and stuff. It's kind of neat, you know.
Was it tough being followed around, you know?
No, it didn't bother me at all. I knew he was there a lot of time with the camera, but it's none of us acting, like trying to, you know, be an actor. It's
right.
It didn't bother me.
Huh. Well, I'm looking forward to it, man. It sounds great, you know. I know Mean Man goes way back. I guess to the Headless Children album, there was a cut.
Yeah.
But why Mean Man? Also, it's the name of the band now, right?
Right. Well, the song on the Headless Children, Mean Man, was written about me.
Okay.
You know, it's a song written about me, Chris. So what better to name the band that? You know?
Do you consider yourself a Mean Man?
Not as in if you came up talk to me, a mean man, but I'm considered a mean man of Wasp.
Right, you know? Right.
It's like when Randy Piper had left or gone from Wasp, he started a band called Animal.
Yeah, right.
And that was a song from not on the first album, but a first single. So, you know, now it's promoted. So it's just part of the past, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Where was your head at before they approached you for this documentary? Were you semi-retired? What were you thinking at that time?
Half a year before I ran into Antoine, I was in L.A. I met some guys that played in a group called Baton Rouge Morgue that were in Finland.
Oh, right.
And when they played in L.A., they wanted to meet me, so they came to my rehearsal room and met me. And then when they left, I looked up a video of them to see what kind of music they played. And got in contact with them to see if they wanted me to come over and do shows with them. And we didn't know what was going to happen, if I was going to join the band, stay with them, blah, blah, blah. So we just, I just took a chance and left L.A. and went and played with them for a while. And it just didn't work out with the band. Too much drinking and partying and this and that. And the music was second.
Yeah.
And I just tired. I got tired of it. And we didn't know what we were going to do. Sarah goes, let's go visit my mom. So I made enough money in Finland that we shipped my guitars, you know, down to France, came here. And where we stay now is big enough for all the younger, but it's a pretty big area. It's a house, pretty big house. So we said, stay here. Mm-hmm. Great. I love it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of rockers that left the U.S., a lot of them. And some of them are making it bigger overseas. You know,
look at the music industry there. Look at the American Music Awards. Do they even have rock on it anymore?
Yeah, it sucks. It all sucks, man.
I don't want to say it sucks, you know, the hip-hop or whatever, because I said that, and I've really gotten some backlash, but that's what all the younger kids listen to. So why would you even want to sit there and try to do a career there if nobody comes to shows,
yeah,
you know?
I agree with you.
But anyway, I took a chance coming over.
Right.
It's been good. I've been there to a few band members here, you know, and some Dutch people, and I got some English speaking people now. You know,
there's a lot of great places that you're really appreciated, like, you know, Japan. Amsterdam's a great place, you know.
Yeah.
That's,
oh yeah. They smoke too much pot there.
Yeah, well, that's
the way. They do in the States now. I mean, shit, now it's legal in the States. But when I left, it was illegal.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Amsterdam was legal.
Right.
Yeah, there's a... I think in Europe, here, hip-hop hasn't taken over.
Yeah.
You know, and hard rock is still... The younger kids still listen to hard rock here. I mean, I live in the south of France, and
right,
hard rock doesn't go that... Hard rock's really not a big thing here, but in the northern part, and in Germany, and in Scandinavia, it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they respect the genre, I think, more over there, you know, like the blues artists. They respect everybody, you know, the hard rock guys.
Yeah.
I agree with you, you know. I am so... Chris, I am so...
One thing is...
Go ahead.
You know, one thing is beautiful about, for 6 years, I haven't had a run-in with a police officer that's tried to stick his, you know, look up my ass for drugs and crap and this and that.
Right.
In L.A., I had the cops bother me 24/7. I got tired of it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Tired of it. Every chance I drive down my street, cops would pull me over, you know, because the way I look, whatever,
right,
blah, blah, blah. I got tired of it.
Yeah.
Here, they treat me like a human being.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amsterdam, you probably wouldn't even be noticed.
That's right in, like, in the middle of Hollywood, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you, man. This country's really, really going down. It's a shame. You know? It's very, very sad.
Yeah. It'll get better once the COVID's over.
I hope so. Yeah, we got the vaccine now. You guys get the vaccine yet in France?
No.
Not yet?
And I think in 2 weeks or in a week they get it.
Right.
December 27th, they start inoculating people.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, we miss you here in the U.S., you know. We hate to see our rockers leave, but I understand, you know.
I miss L.A., but I don't miss all the crime and filth, and I don't miss the cops looking up my ass every 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, California's changed a lot.
If I was still in L.A., I would probably be in jail for them. You know, I had the cops try to plant drugs on me once.
Man,
they planted it on me. That, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, because they didn't like me.
Yeah. Well, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
You know, if you get one bad cop and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't like you, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I've been hassled. I've been hassled many times. You know, I know the feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get tired of it. Especially the sheriffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the pricks.
Yeah, I agree.
back to the documentary.
Well, I'm excited for it. Is this going to kickstart a new chapter in your life, you think, after it's released?
No, I don't think so. It's just going to be, have a documentary of what's been going on in my life in the last 10 years or
right.
5 years. You know, the chance that I took leaving and coming over here, the ups and downs. In the documentary, Antoine, the producer of the film, the guy behind the camera,
right.
He went to America in California and interviewed a bunch of the people that I grew up with.
Yeah, right.
You know, and some my family and stuff like that.
I'm just curious. Did they talk to Lita at all?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Yeah. I've had Lita on the show many times. I was supposed to. She was supposed to be in my book, but she never gave me the okay. She did an interview for it, but she never gave me the okay, so I couldn't put her in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. I introduced her and Cherie to Suzy Quatro because I know Suzy Quatro. You know, she's over in the UK. She's like you. She stayed there. She never came back.
Okay, that must have been a long time ago. She left, right?
Yeah. She left the U.S. a long time ago, and she's been in the UK. She's doing really well there. You know,
that was like before the early 80s.
Yes, exactly. But I keep in contact with her. She's, you know, she's got all kinds of stuff happening, man. You know?
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, but, you know, nobody knows her here anymore. Just, you know?
I remember her on Happy Days.
Yeah.
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 The Fonz.
Yeah. Leather Tuscadero.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
That was great, man. Happy Days.
She was cool. What, go ahead.
Playing over, if I would have stayed in America and California and tried to get a band going, I tried to sort of sense, you know, the people I'm around and whatever going on, this and that. It wasn't working for me.
Yeah.
You know? And, I wouldn't be able to get my career going because how many places is there to play in California?
Exactly.
You got
exactly.
Frisco, Sacramento, kind of in LA, and that's it.
Yeah.
And here within the 100 miles, you know, 500 miles of each other, there's tons of places.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, I imagine you'd be big in Germany, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Bigger up in Scandinavia.
Yeah. Well, you look Scandinavian.
Yeah. Well, the early Wasp albums, that's where a lot of the gold and platinum records that I have.
Yeah.
You know, box in America, a lot of them are from Scandinavia.
You could pass for a Viking, you could pass for a Game of Thrones, you could be an actor in Game of Thrones. You got a great look.
Well, I'm not a small, I'm 6'6".
You're huge.
Yeah, so it's, you know, that's why a lot of people in rock groups don't like playing with me. They don't like standing next to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of small guys out there, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm 6'1".
Being 6'6", it's good in certain instances. Flying, it's not good if you're 6'0".
Did you play football in high school?
I did until... I played a thing called Pop Warner.
Yeah.
They had that. I played Pop Warner, and then all of a sudden, when I, ninth grade, I went down to Hell Week, whatever, and all of a sudden I got it was like a virus in my system.
Right.
And it created water on the knees.
Oh, shit.
Both knees.
Wow.
And I would go in and get it drained, and by the time I got home or out of the doctor's office, my knee would be swelled up, and they didn't know why. They figured it was a rare virus that, like, one out of, you know, 2 million people get. And I had that for, like, a year and a half on one leg and 2 years on the other. So my whole career as sports was gone out the window.
Wow.
That's kind of why I started playing guitar, because I had to get get out of school and sit at home. You know, I had about two braces on my legs where I couldn't bend my legs.
Hmm. Does the leg still hurt?
Kind of like Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Does the leg still hurt you?
No. Once it went away, I haven't had it back. You know, having to lick the fluid in my legs, it did dissolve the cartilage in my knees.
Yeah.
And I haven't had too many. I've had a few knee problems, you know, but not that bad.
You know, it's amazing how many rockers got knee replacements and hip replacements nowadays, you know, from just running around on stage. Yeah.
Back in about 98, I had stepped off the stage accidentally. My foot went off, but I fell down. It went in between the scaffolding, and I thought it broke my knee, but it didn't. But it screwed it up pretty bad, and they got me to New York and did the microscopical surgery.
Right.
Where they cut it, cleaned out the cartilage and shit. They put a little slit. They did that, and I was up and running the next day playing.
Oh wow!
You know, yeah.
I screwed
up. In England, I went to the doctor in England that night, and because my leg was bad, and they were going to put a cast on it for 2 months.
Huh.
And the manager at Blackie is like, "Nah, this we gotta." We'll get them. So they got me to a specialist that did knees in America that knew what to do instead of just stick a cast on you.
Yeah. They hate to put casts on you nowadays. They say that's not a good thing anymore. You know.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of broken bones myself.
I've got a few here and there.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah. Mine are mostly from drinking.
Well, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. I haven't really partied in a while, you know, because I'm a writer. I'm always behind the computer. You know, I got 5 grandkids now. I let loose about a week ago. I got a bad arm. I had surgery in it. And we were watching this guy at a bar, and he was like a one-man show. He was playing great music and stuff. And the bartender gave me rum runners, and I drank maybe 10 of those things. I fell on his equipment. The amp fell on me. Then in the parking lot, I fell down. I was a mess.
You just made an ass out of yourself.
Yeah. But not a lot of people saw me. Yeah. What are you gonna do? I had fun.
I quit drinking in 96, right?
Good for you, man. Good for you.
Well, do you know what keeps me not drinking?
What's that?
When you're sober and you're around people that drink, it's really annoying. It's not annoying. You just go, wow, I don't want to do that.
Right.
But you have to be sober. That's hard to do.
It is hard to do.
It takes a while. Yeah, and I mean, I used to lead the pack.
Well, Chris, if I was around you, I'd try to keep up with you. That's, you know, I can't stop once I start. You know?
I think in my younger days, in the WASP days, I don't know what it would have been like if I didn't drink, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm just glad I don't anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'd still be here. If I still drank, I don't think I'd be here.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys that could say that. Alice Cooper was one of them, you know? He drank a lot. And you know what got him over? It was golf.
Golf?
Yeah, he's a great golfer. He, you know, instead of drinking, he went golfing.
Wow, you know what got me over it?
What's that?
Oh, it was my 6th DUI.
Only 6?
When I got my 6th one, they tried me as my first one because the thing called statute of limitations ran out.
Oh, you're kidding me, really? Huh.
Well, it was so far between the 5th one.
You're lucky.
Yeah. They put me in a program again.
Right.
And I actually listened to the guy doing the program. I did what he, you know.
Good for you.
He tricked me into the quitting. He quit the end of the quitting. He just said the right words to me, yeah. and it made me go, wow, maybe he told me to quit for a year. And he said the right few words to me that clicked in my brain. I said, well, I'll try it for a year, and, you know, because I got nothing to lose. Yeah. And when I tried it, I just saw, which is stupid, just like you at the place the other night. I just saw that and went, man, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but you got willpower to do that, man. That's awesome, well, you know?
Well, there's also, you know, they say that like 1/10 of humans are alcoholics.
Oh, sure.
They say.
Yeah.
I'm definitely one of those. And there is people who can sociably drink.
Right.
You know? But do anything sociably? No. I've never done anything sociably in my life.
That's funny. But I'm like you, when it comes to drinking, if I'm around a crowd and everybody, you know, then you get guys say, I'll buy you a drink and I'll buy you another one, you know, what are you going to do? Say no? You know, it's hard.
About 2004, I was at this place at the Cat and Fiddle in California, uh-huh, on Sunset Strip.
Right.
New Year's, and the owner guy, there's a bunch of rock people there and this and that, and they're having a New Year's party. The owner guy gives me a beer, you know, in a glass, and so I turn around and give it. I go to this person, do you drink? He goes, yeah. I go, here, Merry Christmas. And so the owner sees me without another beer, so he gives me another one.
I know.
And I go, thanks, man. And I turn around, I give it to somebody, and then he sees me, and he goes, gives me a shot, and he goes, Chris. He goes, he drags me to the party, he goes, come on, let's do a shot. And he pours a shot of something, and he gives it to me, and I looked at him, I go, dude, I don't want to break your heart, but I don't drink.
Yeah.
He goes,
yeah.
Why didn't you tell me? I go, you were having such a good time, you know, I don't want to bum out your party. And he goes, shit, Chris. You know, I go, I'm here to have a good time. I'm still having a good time. And he sort of laughs. He told me.
Yeah, I remember sitting in a bar with my wife, and there was another guy there. It was kind of quiet, and the guy was a cop. He was off duty, and he had a drink, and he got set on fire, you know, and it was on fire, the drink. And he says, he looks at me, he says, you got to try one of these. My wife's going, oh, no, don't even try it. And, of course, you know, hey, no problem, you know. I had probably three of those things, you know, and, you know, you dare me. I can't say no. It's hard.
Is that with the Bacardi 151?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You light it on fire.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
It's a scary drink.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt it inside me too. You know, it was burning.
Yeah. Oh man, I used to drink Everclear.
Oh, jeez.
But you got to watch how much you put in the glass, you know.
Yep.
You fill it halfway full, you're going to drink it, and you're going to be face down in the concrete.
My wife grew up in Kentucky, so they had moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
Some heavy-duty stuff.
My stepdad, he was a NASCAR guy. He used to cook when they played in Vegas. So he used to always have bottles of moonshine at his house.
Yeah.
Stuff goes down sweet.
It does. Well, back to music. Back to music real quick.
Yeah.
Was there any animosity between metal bands? Was there any between you guys, you know?
There's not animosities. When you go out and tour, like, there is with doing merchandising and when you're doing the big arenas about selling shirts, that's where you make a lot of money versus you don't have to pay off a record label.
Right.
It's all in your pocket. And there's big animosities there. And, there's been certain, everything's written out on contracts before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of things, like when we first went out with Kiss, we were only supposed to have two lines of merchandising because we had full power of the PA.
Right, right.
And if they took the subs away and we had 80% power, we could have 8 lines of merchandising. Okay?
Yeah.
But the deal was, I told the Blackie, I go, no, we shall not play with Kiss unless we get 100% of the PA. I go, we'll be killed if we don't get 100% of the PA.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so that was the deal. So, 2 weeks into the tour, they don't check the merchandising, and we're putting everything out. And, you know, our company, I think we have Winterland, a Great Southern, they had every bit of merchandising out, and we were doing 2-1 on Kiss. Merchandising, and all of a sudden I come into sound check one day, and we don't get sound check. We don't get our equipment on the stage till after the doors are open.
Right.
And then we were cut to 2 lines of merchandising. So I don't know if that's animosity or if that's just the way the contracts and the way it goes and making money. So,
yeah.
You know, as animosity towards anybody in any other band, I never had any. I always enjoyed being playing with people with other groups. You know, playing with them. But, you know, they play after us or before. I enjoyed being around everybody. I never had any animosities towards anybody.
I know AC/DC, and I think it was Deep Purple, didn't get along very good.
Did you guys?
Uh-huh.
Right. I was watching an interview with him, and they asked him about what he think of Van Halen.
Right.
And you know what he said?
What'd he say?
He goes, oh, they're just a pop band.
Van Halen?
Yeah, that's what he said. That blew my mind. A pop band.
Yeah.
What the crap are you talking about? I mean, that's, you know, how could somebody say it's a pop band? They're more of a pop band than Van Halen was.
Yeah, they are. They've got a few songs. A lot of their music sounds the same, too. You know?
It's good music. You gotta give them credit, man. Yeah. Those guys have been on top for a long time. They've stayed on top, even through people dying and everything.
Right.
You know, I give them that much credit.
Right.
Have you ever been to an AC/DC concert?
That's one band I've never seen. I've never seen AC/DC.
They rock. They rock, and they have the widest variety of audience I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
Yeah, of people, of gender, colors, ages. Everybody, you know, just anybody, black, white, green, yellow, just everybody.
Hmm.
They have the biggest variety of audience I've ever seen.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So I've seen it in the States.
Huh.
You know.
Brian Johnson lives over here. He lives about 15 minutes from me. He's, I mean, one of his houses anyway. Yeah.
He lives in Florida.
Yeah.
I listened to their new album, Power Up. It's pretty good. I like it.
Do you like it?
Yeah. You know what I like? You know what I like better?
What's that?
Firepower.
Firepower, yeah.
My Priest. But I'm a guitar player, man. I love the Priest sound.
Right, right.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the documentary, right?
Back to the documentary. You know, you and I are the same age. So we grew up basically with the same music. Metal wasn't officially classified back then, you know, but we were exposed to Sabbath and Purple and Uriah Heep and Blue Cheer and, you know, Steppenwolf and On Mountain and all those guys. Did you pick metal or did metal pick you? Because you could have gone, you know, like the Zeppelin type hard rock way, you know?
Growing up, I was a Sabbath freak because I liked the sound, the power of Tony's guitar.
Yep.
It kind of picked me, I guess. You know, I have a lot of my friends got into the Grateful Dead, Neil Young. I mean, I love Neil Young. He's one of my favorites. But they got into the Grateful Dead and stuff, and I was always into Black Sabbath, the real intent
right, of
sound going.
Yep.
And, you know, you know where the word heavy metal comes from?
There's a few things, maybe from Steppenwolf, I thought first coined the phrase, but I might be wrong.
I read in a magazine that the first phrase came from was an English writer on like the Sun magazine or whatever describing Jimi Hendrix's music, and she said it sounded like heavy metal.
Okay.
Die.
That sounds about right.
Back in 67.
Right.
Yeah, but he didn't, you know, power phrase the music heavy metal. That's where he just said it sounded like heavy metal falling from the sky.
But
I don't know, what's heavy metal? You don't get heavier music than Black Sabbath.
Right.
Yeah.
I love Black Sabbath. I've always have, you know, since the very beginning, you know.
I still play this. As an encore, I used to play the Electric Funeral, but I just play War Pigs.
Oh, I love War Pigs. It describes exactly what's going on in this country and the world today.
Yeah.
You know?
I played in Germany last year, and I played War Pigs at the end of the show, and there was this American security guard backstage, you know, after the show, about an hour after, and he goes, Chris, can you take a little bit of constructive criticism? I go, I like it just as good as regular criticism. What's the deal? And he goes, well, I don't think you should play those cover songs at the end of the show. I play a Creedence Clearwater,
right.
Fortunate Son,
yeah,
Born to Be Wild, War Pigs, and I play Rockin' in the Free World. He goes, that's a bad choice of songs. And I told him, I said, you know what? I go, dude, I don't play those songs for you or the crowd. I play them for me.
That's my youth, man.
So I've been playing the Wasp stuff and the Mean Man stuff.
Exactly.
I'm playing for me the last four songs.
Exactly. I don't blame you, man.
So, yeah. I remember saying that. I don't care if they like them or not. I play them because I like them.
Have you done an album with just cover tunes of your favorite cover tunes?
No.
No?
I'd have to mean recorded one?
Yeah.
No, I don't got the time to do all that.
Right.
You gotta have money to go in the studio and do all that stuff.
Right. I just talked to Jeff Pilson yesterday from Foreigner. You know, he was in Dokken.
Yeah.
He was in Dokken. He just came out with an album with all cover stuff, man, that he enjoyed doing, you know? And it sounds great. It's a brand new album, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you got the money to get the people together to, you know, rehearse them and go in and play them, yeah.
Yeah.
Do that. I just saw Jeff. I saw him 2 years ago.
Oh, did you?
Here in England. Yeah, playing with Foreigner.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Great. I played with him in L.A. with the Big Balls a few times.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You played with everybody,
great
most
bass.
Likely. Yeah.
Yeah, great bass player.
Very good. And he's a multi-instrumentalist. He plays a lot of different things besides bass.
Yeah.
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 Huh. So what who were the guys growing up, did you admire? I mean, I guess, Tony Iommi was one of them.
Johnny Winter.
Oh, I love Johnny, man. I got to interview Johnny. Yeah.
Yeah. Another guy I admire that nobody knows is a guy named Cub Dakota.
Uh-huh.
From Brownsville Station.
Oh, yeah. Is he still around?
I don't know, but did you ever see them play?
Yeah, I did.
That fucking guy rocked.
Yeah.
Played on stage. He was a good entertainer, man. Great entertainer. You know? Those are people I saw when I was young that I wanted to be like, you know?
What was your first concert?
The first concert I ever went to was at Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yep.
That was probably 71, brain salad surgery.
Yep.
Or 72, could have been 72. And then my brother took me to see Johnny Winter, and that was it for me.
Yeah, Johnny.
That's where I saw Brownsville Station opening for Johnny Winter.
Yeah, they opened up by the way, Cub Coda, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
He passed away in 2000, just so you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
He had the Buddy Holly glasses.
He did.
Yeah. He wasn't the most handsome looking rock star, but the guy, he just rocked when he was on stage.
Yeah.
As in entertaining.
Yeah.
You know?
Smoking in the boys' room. Yeah.
And then seeing Johnny Winter when he stood up and played, that he kicked ass.
Yeah.
In the early days,
yeah.
Man.
He was awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, I was really sad when he passed away because, you know, every year, I mean, he worked hard, man. He was touring every freaking year, just about all year long. And just not to see Johnny around, it's, you know, it was kind of, you know, like near the end of, it's like the end of rock and roll, you know?
About 8-9 years ago, I saw him play the House of Blues, and it was okay, but he sat down. I think he had a cold that night.
Right.
Kept tissuing his nose, but he sat down and played blues, and it was okay, but it wasn't like the old days.
Right.
When he stood up and played with Rick Derringer and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I went to the concert expecting him to be like that, and it wasn't.
No, near the end of his life, he wasn't his old self anymore, you know? I mean, he had huge drug problems. Big time. Oh.
And plus, albinos just don't, their lifespan isn't as long as regular people,
true.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And Edgar's still around.
I saw Edgar Winter about 15 years ago, and that guy kicked ass still on stage.
You know, I interviewed Edgar Winter the day before Johnny died, you know?
Yeah.
That was weird.
Did he know he was going to pass?
He didn't say it. He talked a lot about Johnny. You know, my brother Johnny. But the whole conversation was that. So maybe maybe he knew. I don't know. But,
well, Edgar didn't do too many drugs.
No. Totally different.
Yeah.
Well, we've lost a lot of people, man. You know?
Oh yeah, that's the way this planet works, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta look at it this way. You got 100 years from right now, from this minute, this Earth will be in the same spot, still turning.
Yeah.
And we'll all be gone.
It's true.
We'll all be gone.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. That's why there's no point in arguing and hatred and all that. What for? You know, our life is so short, man. It really is. You gotta enjoy every minute. You know?
Yeah, I was watching a documentary on Netflix about Stalingrad,
because
they don't, in America, they don't teach you that much about World War II.
Right.
In history, but, and just the killing of people, just so stupid.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I if that was over, you know, taking land and stuff, but I mean, like ISIS, killing people just over God.
I know.
It's, you know, what, the humans, we're just animals.
Yeah.
You know? I love the Stalingrad story, man. That is have you ever seen the movie Enemy at the Gate?
Who's in it?
I forget his name. Not Rector Hauer,
I gotta check it out.
The guy in the bib. I think.
I'll watch it tonight.
And it's about Stalingrad. I saw that movie about 15 years ago, and I didn't understand it. I thought it was kind of weird, you know. But then, after I seen the documentary, I was like, wow, man. The way what went on there is hairy. What went on, it's kind of cool. I enjoyed it.
You know,
I learned a lot about history.
Yeah, England went through a lot. I mean, with the Blitz, you know, and how scary was that?
Nothing compared to Stalingrad.
Yeah.
It was funny. They interviewed a soldier that was like in his 90s, almost 100 after this documentary. And after they were, you know, 300,000 people, I guess, or no, 180,000 people surrendered.
Mm.
And they were, Russia marched them off to Siberia or whatever. And when the war was done, the guy said, "Hey, I can go home." No, dude, you're going back to Stalingrad and rebuild our city that you guys ruined. it cracked me up, man.
The Russians were tough, man. I mean, I think the Germans were scared shitless of the Russians. You know,
I played there about 5-6 times
in Russia.
And, But I actually, one of the most memorable things in my life playing was I played there on my birthday at this festival outside of Moscow. And I played with this band. I went with this guy named Kerry Kelly, who played with Alice Cooper, and he plays Alice Cooper songs. And I come up, played 5-6 Wasp songs. And we were playing this outdoor festival. It's about 1:30, 2 in the morning, I'm done playing. I'm the last one to play. And, you know, good night. And I go walking off the stage, and these two, like, KGB cops are keeping me from going down the stairs. They grab my arms. I'm like, I go, no, I just want to go to my, I'm trying to tell them I want to go to my trailer, and they don't speak English.
Right,
they're keeping me from going off the stairs. And my friend Kerry walks by, and I go, Kerry, what the hell's going on? And he points, and I turn around, they got a birthday cake out of his face.
That's why she shocked the hell out of you, huh?
she shocked the shit out of me. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't know. Nobody told me.
That's funny.
So I went back out, and these cop guys were there, and they just were told, hey, don't let that guy walk
yeah.
off. Hey, that's all they knew.
That's a good story.
So I turned around, and they lit the candles. I went out there, and the whole crowd, there's about 30, 40,000 people.
Wow.
It's pretty big. They all sang happy birthday to me.
That is awesome.
In English.
In English, wow.
Yeah, that birthday is weird. It's almost brought a tear to my eye.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
And Russia is like, you know, it's the kids are the same. They're the same everywhere.
Yeah.
Rock and roll kids, you know.
Yeah.
It's different kind of cops here and there in cars they drive.
Yeah.
But it's the same.
You know, people are good in all countries. It's the governments that are fucked up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good people. I know a lot of Russians. They're, you know, we got Russia, a lot of Russians here in Sarasota, and, you know, they're good people, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing
it's
wrong
just with the government.
Yeah, it's the government that screws everything up. The war pigs.
Right.
The war pigs. I enjoyed this compliment Antoine gave you. He said, he loves your multiple experiences and taste for simplicity. This is about you. And had actually altered his own vision of existence. In fact, he said you almost became a spiritual father to him in the way that you inspired him in many of his own decisions. Wow. That's Antoine saying, you know, I guess he had a great experience with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just probably him being around my personality.
Right.
You know, he's I'm born in California. He's born here. It's just a different way of life.
Yeah, exactly.
So a different way to see things. Him doing the documentary, he went over to California and he went up to visit my sister in Wyoming. He said he never realized how the states were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loved going there. So, yeah.
That's a good cop.
I've had some fun times being around him. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. Have you learned how to speak French now?
No.
No?
I can barely speak English. Why would I want to speak French?
That's funny.
I've got dyslexia, so it's really hard for me to read.
Right.
So if you're going to learn a language, it's easier to read. Like, I forget that program. There's a pro, you know, teaches you French, and I just haven't picked it up.
Yeah.
I sit at the table at dinner, everybody talks, and I just don't know what they're saying, but that's all right.
You know, there's a really cool translator now. You know, you know, if somebody's, you should get that, because if somebody's speaking to you, it picks it up automatically and turns it into English, and then you can do the same back and forth.
They have that app on a phone now.
Oh, really? They got it on the phone? That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, where you speak in the language, and then it should, I don't know if it comes back, if it talks to you, or if it prints it out.
Right.
Yeah.
You should have that, because you travel a lot, too, so that'd be good to have.
I don't care. Where I go, most people speak English.
Yeah. Chris, here's a question I ask everyone, and I get some really interesting answers. If you had a field of dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Probably Jimi Hendrix.
Yep, I get that a lot.
Yeah, it would be Jimi Hendrix.
I Robin Trower, I talked to him, and he said James Brown. And I said, well, what about Jimi Hendrix? He said, nah, I'd be ashamed to play with Jimi Hendrix. Coming from Robin Trower.
What?
He said he'd be, you know, I guess, too shy to play with Hendrix.
Oh, I was going to say, he must be prejudiced or something.
No, he says he's not good enough to play with Hendrix, basically.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, Robin Trower's great.
Yeah, he is great. Yeah.
He's one of my favorites. That guy flows like nobody else.
Me too, man. He's mesmerizing. Great music, you know?
Yeah.
I agree.
But I mean, Jimi Hendrix. I'd like to party with Jimi Hendrix, not play, but just do all the drugs and drink. Couldn't have planned it, just partying.
Yeah.
You know, because you grew up in the same era I did.
Right. Same era. We would have been in high school together. Yeah.
They didn't just say no to, they didn't have the little thing say no to drugs when we were kids that said yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a different era nowadays.
You know what was big in my area? It got real big was PCP.
PCP?
PCP, Angel Dust, Green, they used to call it Green. That got, you know, that got really big in Maryland. I grew up in Maryland, in D.C., in that area. So.
Baltimore.
Yeah, that got huge, man. But, I mean, Baltimore had some incredible, like, Cash and Tie Stick and really good stuff. You know, from the harbor.
Yeah.
I had a pass. we all did, you know?
Well, it was big when I was a kid was LSD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's see, microdot, window pane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't imagine that crap now.
I know. Imagine that, you know? With the way the world is now, take a hit of window pane, you know, a couple of hits.
Oh.
I couldn't take it.
Yeah, all right.
I almost lost it. I got my first class SEC license because I was a disc jockey. I went to broadcasting school, and I was actually a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s. We got our SEC license. Our first class license was really hard. So to celebrate, we did something.
Yeah.
And instead of smoking it, we did something else with it. Up your nose. I thought that was the end. I thought we weren't going to make it. You can see the edge and you're almost going over the edge.
Yeah.
To never come back again. That was the worst. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know you'll come back.
I know. I didn't think I was coming back.
Yeah.
That was rough, man. We all go through those experiences. But you know what? I don't have any regrets. You know?
Yeah. I don't.
No.
I don't. It was a fun era, you know?
Yeah,
I wouldn't change it for nothing.
No, we were very lucky because we had the best music growing up. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's nothing like the music from the 70s, early 70s.
Yep. We were very lucky.
New albums every week.
Yep. Great concerts. Concerts. So you remember they were like $650, $550, and $450. That was the ticket prices. And you got to see like three big bands, you know?
It was. Yeah. Weren't even over $10.
Yeah, exactly. I think I saw the Stones for $10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I saw Johnny Winter for $8 at the Swing Auditorium.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great days. You know, it was different. The ticket prices were cheap because they wanted you to buy the album. They wanted, you know, and it's so different now. Now they make money on the concerts. And then, like you said, the merchandise, it's totally different.
It's all about merchandising.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about money.
It's all about money.
The almighty dollar.
That's it, man. Chris, you got anything else you want to promote? I mean, the movie, we're all looking forward to that January 15th. Can't wait till it comes out.
I got a GoFundMe thing I'm trying to finish up my rest of my record.
Was this an EP originally, or what was this one?
I wrote all enough songs for a whole album, but I could only afford to record an EP. So I'm waiting. I would take the money from playing live and put that into the recording.
Right.
But since I haven't been able to play for almost a year, I'm kind of dead in the water on that. But I have a GoFundMe, for to finish my record.
What's the, where's the site at? Is it?
Where's the GoFundMe? So I guess it's done. Is it done? My wife says it's done.
Okay. Oh, it's done.
The Indiegogo.
Okay.
Till the 3rd of January.
Okay, awesome. Very good. Are you going to do any touring once this COVID shit is over?
Yeah, good. Oh, yeah.
Well, make sure you come back to the States, too, man.
Well, I had Canada in last April. I was supposed to have, like, 17 shows from the East to the West Coast, all through Canada, booked, and then COVID hit.
Yeah. So. Oh wow!
I think they rebooked them in April, and I know that nobody, we're not going to be inoculated by them, so I think they're going to rebook in November. Yeah.
We'll all bounce back. Hopefully the injections will work. Everybody will get the shots. Yeah. You know, and
right,
go back to normal.
If I can find the right booking agent that'll book me in the States, I'll do the States. If not, then I won't.
All right. Well, if I can help you, I know all the venues in my area, and I know all the guys that book the shows in my area, so
yeah.
I can email you anything. Yeah.
It's usually a booking agent you got to go through. You know, they're the ones that's kind of a hassle.
Right.
If you don't, you don't tour, because they don't, it's got to be set up a certain way with them.
Does your wife help you with the bookings and all that?
Yeah, she does most of it.
Yeah, and it's amazing. All the guys today, all the rock stars, their wife is kind of in charge of all that now. You know?
Yeah, wife being the manager.
Yeah, exactly. Making a family business.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Without her, I wouldn't even be doing this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I saw her in one of the interviews you did. She was right by your side. She looks like an incredible person. You know.
She's out of them, all the people I've ever, women or girls, women I've been with in my whole career, she's the only one I ever cared about my career.
That's awesome. You found the right woman. You know, behind every great man is a great woman.
Yeah.
I can say that about my wife too. Yeah. That's awesome.
All my last wives or girlfriends or whatever, they didn't give a shit about my career.
Yeah. Yeah.
She does. She looks good about it.
Yep. That's
it. If it wasn't for her, the documentary wouldn't have gone, because it was mostly her and Antoine wanting to do it.
Right. Well, thank her for me. You got,
yeah.
Because of her, we got more Chris Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
Chris,
it might be interesting. I think people will like it.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Definitely. We're all looking forward to it. Chris, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. Good luck with the new movie, January 15, 2021. And again, I hope to see you in the States and hopefully in Florida one day.
Yeah. If I'm there, come up, go. I'm the guy. Come up and go to my Facebook. I'm the asshole that interviewed you.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say it just like that, because you'll probably remember it.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Thanks, man.
Okay. All right. Hey, you have a good time. Thank you for chatting with me. All right.
No problem, man. I had a great time, and happy holidays to you.
Yeah. All right. Stay safe. COVID safe.
I know. You too, man. Bye bye.
Okay.
Take
care. Bye.
Bye bye. For more information about Chris Holmes, visit www.chrisholmesofficial.com. That's his website. Got another website, chrisholmes1.bandcamp.com/merchandise. Another website, this is his Facebook website, www.facebook.com/chrisholmesofficial. Watch for the Mean Man documentary. The trailer's out. You can see the trailer on YouTube. You can just punch in Mean Man Chris Holmes. And you can also pre-order the Mean Man documentary at Amazon.com. Once again, the release date is January 15th, 2021. Very special thanks to Billy James, the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR, for arranging this interview with Chris Holmes. and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen. For each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends, if you have comments or suggestions for the show, you can contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. You can have the latest interviews right into your inbox. Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho. That's the YouTube channel. And for the very latest interviews. And listen, people, it's real news, something you don't get much nowadays. And a great present for the person in your family that loves rock and roll would be my new book. It's out. It's called The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. It chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. You can order yours today now on hardcover or ebook. The hardcover is a collector's item at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Until next time, this is Ray Shasho on Interviewing the Legends. We are now 5 years strong, going on episodes of in the 200s now. We thank you for listening. Have a great week. And stay safe. God bless.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.